This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, this is Alex Rodriguez, and you're listening to the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN New York.
Thank you, Alex, and a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Tuesday. It's January 25th. It's 2022. Michael K., Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg. We're apart, but we're together for the next 4 hours. The other 20, your responsibility. The most important thing about today's show is that it is, in fact, Mindy Rosenberg's birthday.
That's right.
And we wish that lovely woman a happy, happy birthday. And may she live as long as she wants, but never have to want as long as she lives.
Well, that is so very sweet of you. And she is currently doing things that 74-year-old ladies do on their birthday, playing Mahjong with some friends.
Oh, how are the tiles going?
I will make sure that she hears the start of the show later. But, yeah, 74 for the old Mindaroo.
Wow.
Having a little pizza party tonight. Went out and got a birthday cake.
It's a lot.
Is there anything better, by the way, Don, than just a standard issue yellow sheet cake with vanilla icing from the grocery store?
I don't know. I'm partial to ice cream cake. I, matter of fact, I don't think I would want anything else but an ice cream cake for my birthday.
You know, and I have asked for my birthday
next week
as a chocolate cake with yellow inside and chocolate filling.
Oh, so you like the yellow cake, but you want the chocolate filling.
Yes.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
A delight.
Mm-hmm. It is a delight. There's so much to talk about today. Right smack dab in the middle of ENN, we'll find out if anybody's been elected to the Hall of Fame. At this point, it looks like David Ortiz will be close. Doesn't look like Bonds or Clemens will get in. Looks like Schilling will not get in. Looks like A-Rod will not get in. So, again, Peter will have that information dab in the middle of ENN. He's following it closely.
I have lots of opinions on it, too.
You do?
Well, there's so many other places to go.
All right, well, where we're going to go is, where do the Giants go right now? Because the news broke just a bit ago that Sean Payton is not coming back as the head coach of the New Orleans Saints. He said he's quote-unquote retiring. Now, there's a lot of reasons why this could be. They look like they might be at the beginning of a rebuild. They obviously don't have a quarterback. They're well over the cap. And he's walking away after 16 seasons. Now, this show is obviously in New York, so we tie it this way. Is this somebody that the Giants hold up their head coaching search and give a call? Do they see, is he really retired, or is he just getting away from the Saints? Now, he has years left on his contract with New Orleans, so if you get him, you are going to have to give them some draft collateral, something to get the rights to him. And do you think that that's worth it? And does he want to go into another situation that's in a bad cap situation, not as bad as New Orleans? And the quarterback situation is also way up in the air. But I'll tell you what, guys, I'd at least make the exploratory phone call. You can't let a coach like this be quote-unquote available without checking in.
No, but you have to do your due diligence. But Michael, if he left because he wanted to coach someplace else this year, I think he would probably make it known to teams looking for a coach that he was available in some way, shape, or form. So the fact that you'd have to reach out tells you you've got no shot. It's not happening.
He might be in a position, since he's under contract, that he really can't do that. Obviously, it's easy to do with an agent, but you just make the phone call. He started here with the Giants. I mean, this is where he cut his teeth. Maybe it would hold something for him.
No, you do it. Of course, you make the phone call. It wouldn't hurt to make the phone call. My point is, if you read the tea leaves, it sounds like he's walking away because there's a clear rebuild there. And I don't think he wants to spend the next 3 years of his – he's 50, you know, just turned 58 years old, wants to be involved in a rebuild. They're like $79 million over the cap. They really don't have a quarterback of the future. I don't think Jameis Winston's the answer there long term. So if he's walking away for another opportunity, Michael – wouldn't you want to send out some sort of a feeler to the Giants before they hire somebody that, hey, I'm going to walk away from New Orleans, I'm really interested in coaching the Giants? In some way, you'd have to get that message to John Mara. If John Mara's got to reach out, then Sean Payton is not coaching this year or has his eyes set someplace else. And I think he's just going to walk away for a year, maybe two, work in television, and then have his pick of the litter later on. Why would you want to leave one bad situation to go to the Giants? And the Giants might have to give up one of the first-round picks to get him. They're in a bad cap situation with questions at quarterback, too. So you might as well just stay in New Orleans then.
It is interesting, though. If you're Joe Shane, do you want Sean Payton? Because Sean Payton had a lot of input into the way that team was built. I wouldn't say he was a GM, but, boy, he had a lot of input. Now, if you're the new GM and you want to build everything in your own vision, do you want a coach that's going to have that much say and that much sway? Maybe you do because he's such a highly respected coach, but I think he'd have some pause. I mean, he wants to really build this from the bottom up, and when you bring in a Hall of Fame coach, and that's what Peyton is, you know, winning a Super Bowl in all those years in New Orleans, it would be interesting to see if he really did, if you put him under, you know, sodium pentothal, did he really want him?
I know. I see what you're saying, but you also want to be successful your first chance at being a general manager. And if you end up winning, isn't it better to defend how much you were involved in the winning than to maybe lose and lose your job and never get a chance to do it again? Not too many general managers, Michael, fail here and then get other opportunities. I don't see anybody knocking on Mike Maccagnan's door or John Idzig's door or Jerry Reese's door asking them to be general managers after they failed here. Or at least got fired from here. Certainly there was a level of success for Jerry Reese for sure. He's got two Super Bowls while he was the GM. But, you know, when you fail here, it seems to be much bigger than failing someplace else. So if I got a chance to get myself a future Hall of Fame coach to help my first couple of years as general manager be successful, I think I'll live with losing some power.
Now, here's Keyshawn Johnson and his take on Sean Payton.
I know Sean Payton. Never said a word to me. But when you've been around football and you played and you've been around coaches and stuff like that, I can look and I can tell something ain't right here. I can look at his face and tell it's wearing on him. Like it's literally wearing his ass out to continue to struggle in this situation of no quarterback, no top receiver, Alvin Kamara in and out of the lineup, the defense holding it together. You could just look and tell. He's looking at this and saying, there's no way. I mean, he's messing around with Jameis Winston. Then they go 6-2 at one point. Jameis is hurt now. All of a sudden, he's done. You could just look at the fog in his face. Now you look at he's messing around with Taysom Hill. It's like, oh, God. You can just tell.
Although he's the one who gave Taysom Hill that big, big contract.
Yeah. Well, clearly it's a rebuild with New Orleans. And does he want to have to deal with that? Step away. Go do television. They give him out like candy now for anybody that's had success in the NFL. So he'll get a gig. And then, and Michael, in a year or two from now, maybe Andy Reid walks away in Kansas City?
No way.
I mean, now listen, he's getting to the age now where maybe he decides to retire. Isn't that possible? Or is Andy Reid's not going to coach forever?
I think he will die in that job rather than leave Patrick Mahomes.
But the point is that there'll be a lot of other opportunities in a couple of years where he might be able to have his pick of the litter. Sit back and be able to pick the job that he wants rather than just having to take what happens to be available. And if he's walking away for all the reasons Keyshawn said, then why would he walk into another situation that would almost be identical? I mean, the Giants situation is very similar. Cap problems, questions at quarterback. I don't
now,
think you know, I mean, they might be more if they go out and get a quarterback. Maybe things will be a little different, but hey, we were hearing rumors that one of the destinations that would be New Orleans for Russell Wilson. And he seemed like he still walked away. So either that's not true or their just cap situation wouldn't allow that to happen.
I have mixed feelings on this, too. I mean, if you still do have the desire to coach, is it a little weak to walk away from it? Like, yes, they have issues. They have issues. They're more talented than the Giants. It's not an utter and complete rebuild. They need a quarterback. They're not a completely from-the-ground-up situation. So I wonder if he still has the desire to coach. You know, this is the only place that was his – this was his machine. The only time he's done it. It's not like Sean Payton has done this multiple times. He's not Bill Parcells. So considering this is the only time he's done it, I just don't know that I'm as confident as everybody else is in him being able to walk away, no Drew Brees, and be the guy to turn a franchise around.
It's a good point because even with Drew Brees – he won one Super Bowl, in 15 years with Drew Brees, essentially. So lost some very, very tough games. But he is certainly a guy that's looked at as a top-flight coach. Now, everything that I've heard, though, is the fact that he has a really soft landing spot is why he's leaving. Because the big rumor is that Fox has reached out to him, and they are trying to cover their backside if, in fact, Troy Aikman takes the Amazon job. So if Troy Aikman takes all the money and goes to Amazon and leaves Joe Buck, they need a lead analyst. And they think that Sean Payton could be that guy. Now, I've never looked at Sean Payton and go, that's going to be a dynamic John Madden sort of guy. But they know better than I do. I'm sure that they've been in rooms with him and he comes across as electric. But NBC thought the same thing about Drew Brees. And, you know, his first playoff game was a bust. So, again, television executives have guys on their list that they like a lot. And obviously Fox loves Sean Payton. I've seen rumors that the contract would be like $2.5-3 million. But one thing that you fall into, though, what Don said, he's 58 years old.
He'll be 53 on Saturday.
All right, you get comfortable, and you take that money. And all of a sudden, you look up and you're in your 60s, and you're Bill Cowher, and you're not taking another job. But again, maybe that might be a good thing for him. I'm not sure. Not sure.
Well, he's been there for 15 seasons. That's a long time to be one place.
Yep.
And he's got 3 years left on his contract, and probably just say, maybe I just need a break. So I don't think it's weak, Peter, if you just look and say, listen, I put this organization on the map.
Okay.
You know, where were the Saints before I got here? I got them their first Super Bowl. I made them relevant. Whether it's Drew Brees or me, he certainly was definitely a part of it. Now it looks like they're going to go through a little bit of a rebuild. And, all right, I don't want to spend the next 3 years here. I'm going to walk away, do some television for a while, and decompress. It's been done before.
Well, no, I agree. I got nothing.
You know, and I don't
think
it's him bailing on a bad situation. I think the bad situation just made him reassess, all right, well, is this how I want to spend, you know, the next 3 years? Is this good for my health? Is this good for my coaching? Is this good for my career? I guess you can look at it as weak or just look at it as now is probably the best time to do it.
If he takes off the next few years, that's one thing. However, thank you. This is perfect timing. However, if he doesn't, he just goes right away to coaching. That's a problem to me.
Now, Dominic Foxworth has a suggestion for Sean Payton, and here's what he said.
If I'm a player in that locker room, specifically a quarterback in that locker room,
ooh,
I'm at Jerry's front door right now. Please, please, please.
Mr. Jones.
Make this happen.
Yes, sir.
Because Sean Payton, to your point, he's made every quarterback that he's had better. He's made their jobs easier. He has some fools out here thinking Taysom Hill could play quarterback because he's that damn good of a quarterback coach.
Yeah.
So, absolutely. If they can make that move, no matter how good or bad Mike McCarthy was last year,
no.
I think Sean Payton is an upgrade.
I think that Sean Payton has a home in Dallas, so maybe he's just stepping away for a year, figures Mike McCarthy will blow it, and that job will open up. You know, his buddy, his mentor, Bill Parcells worked with Jerry Jones, and Bill Parcells has told me he had no problems with Jones whatsoever. Whatsoever. Because Jones had so much respect for him, he let him do his thing. I don't think he has respect for some coaches. He kind of walks over them. He's still going to be the GM, but he will let you do what you do and run the room. And I think Sean Payton will command respect. And if he wants a Cowboy job, I think he could get it right now.
That would certainly be the best spot for him, right? I mean, you're fully loaded. You're going to get what you need. You have everything at your disposal, including maybe the most talented roster in the NFC. So it couldn't be a better spot for him. I can't even think of what's close from an appeal standpoint to Dallas.
In terms of talent, for sure.
Overall,
those jobs don't open up. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't get jobs like that where the team's already loaded. They're just not sure about their coach.
Well, you're talking about significant compensation. So, obviously, the Cowboys are picking low in the first round. Right? So, how much is it going to cost? Is it going to cost multiple first round picks? You know, how much is Jerry willing to give New Orleans to get him to be the coach?
And also, when people say he's worn out, right? He was 9-8 this year without a quarterback. It's one of his best coaching jobs ever.
I know there are people that are going to say, you know, it was Brees. Name the coach that's ultra relevant with no quarterback. I mean, most of the ones that are really successful have really good quarterbacks. And listen, they worked hand in hand together. But as you said, Michael, their quarterback situation was a mess, and they finished above 500.
Well, so what's the situation? How would he if he were to take another job this year, it would have to be in a trade from New Orleans?
Unless New Orleans is just, you know, you've done so much for us and they're magnanimous, but that's not the way to run a team. They're going to have to give something up. I don't think he's going to take a job this year.
And otherwise, he has to resign and retire for how long?
At least 3 years.
At least, yeah, at least the rest of his deal.
Now, obviously, the compensation gets less and less as the contract gets less and less. But if he sits, if he walks away for a year and then decides he wants to coach in 2023, then New Orleans is going to be expected some compensation for that. And I think that's what's going to happen. That's a nice piece of a change for him to be able to make next year at Fox. And maybe he finds it suits him and he spends a couple of years there.
But I'll tell you this, though, Don. If Fox plans to have him replace Troy Aikman, you don't hire the guy for 1 year. You don't bring in your number one analyst for 1 year. Now, Greg Olson is very widely respected. Do they think that he could be the number one guy? I can't believe that Fox would let Troy Aikman go to Amazon. But Amazon could offer more money than Fox would even think about offering.
Well, I don't know. I don't even know what their relationship is. But it's got to bother Aikman that Romo's making so much more money than him.
And he'll probably make that kind of money with Amazon.
So, so that
also, it also bothers Aikman that Skip Bayless is there.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. So if the money's right, you know, why not go there? So, and then if Sean Payton's going to replace Aikman, it's not going to be for $2, $3 million a season.
Isn't it weird, though? I can't, like, for as prominent a figure as Sean Payton has been in football for the last 15 years of our collective football lives, I can't picture his talking and personality that much.
Me neither.
I'm trying
he's morphed into looking like Mrs. Doubtfire. I don't know. I've never heard him where I go, wow, he's going to be electric on the air.
I'm trying
to
remember.
I can't picture it.
What was our impression? What did we think Aikman was going to be?
I don't even remember.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember myself. But I just remember him as a player. Like, he spoke, but I don't
Aikman
remember.
Might be the best one now. I think he's morphed into the best guy.
Who's that?
Aikman.
He's very
good. I really respect. I think that team is great. I think Aikman is very, very good. But I had no idea he was going to be this good when he was like a player. I didn't go, that's a guy that's going to be amazing in the booth. He said NBC got it wrong with Breeze, at least right now. Breeze might grow into be
I mean, Breeze
a very
is brand
new.
That's the problem with throwing these guys into big primetime slots immediately.
You know what, Peter? Because they all wanted to have their own Tony Romo. CBS did it with Tony Romo. So they think they all can get a Tony Romo.
But even Tony Romo, to me, I don't think is all that. Everybody goes crazy for him, but I don't see why you're paying him $18 million a year. Even John Madden would be like do the B or C game for a year or two before he was given the opportunity with Summerall.
Now, Andrew Marchand of the New York Post reporting just now as we were on the air, ESPN is considering a pursuit of Al Michaels for Monday Night Football, the Post has learned. And Amazon's going after him as well, so he's going to make a pretty penny.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of money going his way. And for whoever analyst works with him.
By the way, how old's Al? 77?
I think
so. Yeah. 77.
Wow. One more big deal for Al.
I got to tell you what, though. I don't know if you guys agree with me, and I'm a big Mike Tirico fan. I like him personally. I think he's great on the air. But why are you shoving this guy out that everybody wants? Well, what are you doing? Why is NBC making that change? Is there something wrong with Sunday Night Football? I don't get it. Why would you force him to go to Amazon or ESPN? No sense.
Is he being forced, though? That's because
for Tirico? Yeah, they're ready for Tirico, and I think that part of Tirico's deal was you're going to take over at the end of Al's contract. Now, these things could change, as NBC showed with Jay Leno and Conan O'Brien, but it seems like they're forcing him out.
But right now, you got to think about the future, and I think Mike Tirico is the future for NBC. So if you mess around, then I don't know when Mike's contract is up. We used to have him here at ESPN and ABC, and then he went to NBC.
Well, and he's been sitting there for a while.
Eventually, if you start renewing Al, Peter, then Tirico starts to be like, well, I guess you don't believe in me. I'll go someplace else. Well, I mean, the long-term answer is Tirico, so eventually you got to give him that job.
And listen, Tirico's not a fresh-faced kid out of college. He's got to get to it, right? Like, this is the prime of his career. So they probably figured, Michael, we're going to make this deal for you. When the time this deal's done, Al Michaels is going to be 77 years old. We will be ready for you to go. And they're just sticking with it. And you kind of can't knock them. If they took the gamble that Al would be done at 77, and it turns out there are other places who want him for one more deal, I think you still have to live with it and go, we got a great guy in Tirico. We now have Maria Taylor as a host. We're just going to move forward.
No, I hear what you're saying, but to me it kind of reeks of ageism because he's still great. And obviously, Amazon thinks the world of now. There's a couple of people I feel sorry for. I feel sorry for Steve Levy. That, but
if that happens, yes.
If it happens, but if you're Steve Levy, I mean, they're not replacing you with me. They're replacing you with Al Michaels.
But correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think Al did every Sunday night game. You know,
well, he did most of them
at this stage of his career. He might say, all right, I'll go sign on with Monday Night Football and I'll do 12 of the games. You know,
and also, you know what? The Monday Night Football now is even more of an interesting and desirable job because you get to do the Super Bowl. In the new deal, ABC has the Super Bowl. So Al Michaels, everybody thought that this Super Bowl, which NBC has, would be his last. Well, it might not be.
And you can make the case, forget about like legacy, and certainly Al Michaels' name resonates with every sports fan around the globe. But right at this particular second, Mike Tirico's better.
I agree. Mm-hmm.
You know, so
I wouldn't say it's that slam dunky.
Well, I thought
I mean, Al Michaels is one of the greatest of all time. And again, I love Mike Tirico, but Al Michaels is on the Mount Rushmore.
He is.
But like, there also is a part of like, how many times do you get to sign a deal over and over and over and over again? If someone else is good, to Don's point, if you want them to be your future, you got to give them a shot, or you're
that's the best point. Is, you know, Al Michaels not going to do this forever. Catches everybody, and Mike Tirico can do this for another 20 years.
And if you remember, Michael, when there was that, what was it? I guess the Thursday package earlier when NBC was in it, and the NFL stepped in and said, no, we want Al Michaels, not Tirico.
Right.
You know, and it's because of the name value of it. But I think Al's looking to scale down. And you don't have to worry about Mike Tirico scaling down. He'll do everything you ask him to do.
You know, I wasn't even going to say this, but the real plan for ESPN is to have a Michaels K megacast on Monday Night Football.
Is that true?
Yeah, go up against the Madden cast and the regular broadcast. So that's what they're really talking about.
That is big.
The Michaels K. You know, it works, right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah,
but
sure.
You know, ultimately, as you're waiting for Al to decide to step down himself, you might lose Mike Tirico. And they clearly love Mike.
And they should. He's outstanding.
They're ready for it.
We got a tweet here from Dan. Has Tirico already been with NBC for 5 years?
I thought it was longer.
That's a long time to just be the host guy and do the Olympics for the name that he was when he came over there.
Well, he does NBC. He fills in for Sunday night when Al is
off. That's a couple times a year, and then he hosts otherwise.
Yeah.
You know how I feel. I think it's time to bring back Mike Patrick and Joe Theismann.
Interesting.
Well, I enjoyed them.
They were the best. And I never liked Theismann until that period. Found him annoying, but I loved him in that job. He was one of the weird local athletes you're supposed to love who I always found, like, annoying. Like, Riggins is who I loved. Theismann I found annoying. But he was good with Mike Patrick.
Now, under its new agreement, according to Andrew Marchand, by 2023, ESPN ABC will have added 6 extra games, 4 of which will be on doubleheader days. So the crew that's in there could be that crew if they get Al Michaels. This is a tough business, man.
No, it's
tough.
It's big, and there's a lot of money. There's a lot of money in it, but to the original point, there is money for Sean Payton to make somewhere if he decides to take a year or two off. And if he ends up being Bill Cowher and never coaching again, well, maybe.
Bill Cowher seems happy.
But he does seem happy. There was always rumors, but I think it's worked out for Bill. He's been there. God, how long has he been on TV now?
I think he's on TV longer than he was the coach of the Steelers.
On TV?
Yeah.
Because Tomlin's been there forever. You know, so it's a nice gig to have. And there's a lot of money to be made, as we've just outlined. And if he gets the itch to coach again in a couple of years, I'm sure there's going to be plenty of jobs he can choose.
And you know these football people, they can't go back to their family. That's not even an option.
Oh, wow. It's game time, brought to you by Tullamore Dew Irish Whiskey. We've got a couple of hockey games, Stars-Devils at 7 p.m. on ESPN+, and then Flyers-Islanders at 7:30 on ESPN+, and also you could hear it right after this show. So the pregame's at 7, and game time is at 7:30, so you could hear it at 98.7, mm-hmm. and you could watch it on ESPN+.
And that's Islanders got to win that game. Flyers haven't won in their last 12. And tonight, officially, Keith Yandel will become the Iron Man of the NHL. 965 consecutive games played.
Wow. Love that, Yandel.
Doug Jarvis's record.
Wow.
That's Game Time, brought to you by Tullamore Dew Irish Whiskey. During the big games this season, enjoy a Tullamore Dew, the original triple blended, triple distilled, and triple cask matured Irish whiskey. Remember, when it's game time, it's Tully time. Please enjoy responsibly. All right, we'll come back, do a little Hall of Fame talk. Also, there's trouble brewing in Brooklyn. Trouble brewing in Brooklyn. We'll talk about it. Kay LaGreca-Rosenberg and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. 1-800-919-3776. We have Chris Kreider on today at 4:30. And Don, he scored his 30th goal yesterday. Another Ranger win over the Kings. Adam Fox with the shootout goal that gave them the victory. And even when they don't play well, they didn't play well at the beginning of the game, they win these games. I mean, there's something about this team right now.
Yeah, it's, like I said, they're breaking a lot of the analytical way that people look at what they do. They're kind of an average team 5-on-5, but their penalty kill, their power play's been outstanding, their goaltending's been great. And when you get somebody like Chris Kreider, who never scored more than 28 goals in his career, in his 10th season in the NHL, now has 30 through the first 43. No Ranger has scored that many goals in this short a time since Don Murdoch did it in 1977. That's why you're in first place. So he has just been unreal. Half of his goals have come on the power play. Leads the NHL in goals. There hasn't been a Ranger to do that since 1942. You know, so we'll see if he ends up leading the league. But the fact that he's got more goals than Alexander Ovechkin tells you the kind of start to the season he's had. And he's going to the All-Star game, and it'll be fun talking to him.
Now, the other Garden tenant, another loss yesterday as the Knicks lose to the Cavaliers. And you watch the Cavaliers, and they're such an interesting young team. You almost get the feeling that when LeBron's contract with L.A. is over, he might look at the Cavaliers and go, now I'll go back and win a championship with them again. Because they're pretty good. And the Knicks just fell behind by 15. They climbed back in. They took a lead, but they ended up losing 95-93. A couple of bad shots at the end. Interestingly enough, the final shot that they got, Tom Thibodeau called out R.J. Barrett, said it was a bad shot. He said he's so good going to the basket, he settled for that shot. They were down by two, and they kept taking threes. But they didn't play well, and they're in the middle of a tough road trip now. They're gonna face the Heat next. And this could be a stretch that really buries them. You know, everybody keeps talking about last year, you know, they won 14 of the last 18 games. I'm not sure they can do that this year. And this next stretch on the road, West Coast, the whole deal, they could be in some trouble if they don't play better.
And we're still talking right now them half game out of 10th.
Yeah.
So they're not even in the play-in. We're more than halfway through the season. They're not even in the play-in. So they've got a lot of work to do if they're going to get to six, and I don't think they can get to six. Do you?
I don't think they'll get to six. If they make the playoffs, they'll be in the play-in. In terms of the Knicks, I would suggest that everybody – you should listen to the whole 4 hours anyway. You miss a minute, you miss a lot. But we have an author on, Chris Herring, who wrote a book, Blood in the Garden. And it's about the decade of the 90, that Knick team, the team that I covered on the MSG Network, so it held great meaning to me, the Riley and Van Gundy teams. And the book is so good that I got it on Saturday, and I was done with it on Monday morning. I kept reading during all the commercials of the football games. I couldn't put it down how good it was. And I lived it, and I found out so many things that I didn't even know were going on. It's just fascinating. So we're going to talk to Chris about that at 4 o'clock.
You know, reading the first couple of chapters, I started it yesterday, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
There will be people that have been a fan of the NBA for, like, the last 10 years that didn't know basketball was played this way.
Oh, it was mugging.
From a physical standpoint.
Yeah, just their practices and the way that they, you know, just to have Oakley and Mason on the same team. And even, you know, with the book starting with Xavier McDaniel there too. I mean, just to have those three guys on the court just throwing elbows and fighting for rebounds and the drills that they would have and the fights they'd get into with each other.
And when you read this book, I hate to say it because he's kind of a god in basketball. Pat Riley's a little off. I mean, wow. I mean,
what, crazy man?
Like crazy. We'll get into it with Chris. It's just amazing. And then we have Chris Kreider. So we have a couple of Chris's on in the 4 o'clock hour. And then, as I mentioned at the start of the show, Hall of Fame voting becomes final today, 6:15, right in the middle of ENN. They will announce it. It could be no one. No one gets elected. And just Jim Cott and Tony Oliva are there during the ceremonies because they got elected by a veterans committee. But right now it looks like it'll be close with Ortiz. I don't think anybody else is going to make it. Don't think anybody else is going to make it. Now, you guys know how I feel about Jeff Passan.
Oh, he's a great guy.
Well, he tweeted something out earlier and wrote a column about it. And so many people have said this, and I have to just strongly disagree. This is what he tweeted out. Barry Bonds belongs in the Hall of Fame, and if he's not there by the end of today, the museum has failed at its stated mission, preserve history. That's nonsense. He is in the Hall of Fame. He is in the museum. I was there this summer. He's there. Roger Clemens is there. Pete Rose is there. The story of the game is being told. That doesn't mean that he has to be in the plaque room. As long as you're instructing the baseball writers to, you know, consider sportsmanship and character, I could see they're going to be kept out. That's all there is to it. Yeah, his numbers tell you he's one of the greatest players who ever lived. Roger Clemens, one of the greatest pitchers who ever lived. But please stop that sketchy argument. The museum's not doing its job. It is doing its job. You just don't get a plaque.
Yeah, every one of their accomplishments is acknowledged in the Hall of Fame.
Everyone.
He just might not be in the Hall of Fame. So when you talk about the story of baseball being told within that museum, it's told. Everything Barry Bonds did. And his omission in the Hall of Fame, of not being there, is also telling the story. So when you're walking, if I'm walking with Marco and Jalen one day and they look at Barry Bonds with the home run record and they look at all the things that he accomplished and they'll show his spikes for this and his hat for that and the jersey for that. And when we go through all of the plaques and there's no Hall of Fame plaque, why, Dad? Well, here's why. Then I tell the story.
But I actually think that Michael's argument's a little tenuous, though.
Why is that?
The saying, honestly, he is there, he's just not in the Hall of Fame. I think
No. The Hall of Fame is an entire museum. You're talking about the plaque room.
Right, but I think you're being Captain Literal Man on what Jeff means.
But they're represented in the museum.
But he's saying, what Jeff is saying, as far as I can understand it, is that given everything, skill-wise, and the things he's done, it doesn't make sense that Barry Bonds is not elected to the Hall of Fame.
But if you're instructing the writers about sportsmanship and character, then you're telling them anybody that cheated shouldn't be in. Now, people that cheat are in, and I think that you should not put in the hands of human beings, the writers of America should not be judging the character of players. That should not be part of the marching orders.
It's too inconsistent. It doesn't make sense.
Because there are people in the Hall of Fame that I personally know that are terrible people. Terrible people. But they're in there because it wasn't something that, you know, you're considering about steroids or something like that. But their character is terrible. But that's okay. Well, people that took amphetamines every single day in order to get up to play, that's okay. That's not cheating. People have corked their bats. That's not cheating. People that cheat on their wife every single time they went on the road. That's not a character issue. Come on, man.
Well,
Stop it.
This was going to be my take. Might as well throw it in now. Is that, you know, forget about this. I know it's a semantics game, Peter, but where I think Jeff is wrong is saying you can't tell the story of the game. No, the story of the game is being told. If you want to tell me he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, then say he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. The only argument that I think works of keeping him out is if you believe steroids is the reason he got in. I don't like it as being a punishment. Who are you to punish? If you feel that the steroids got him the numbers to get him into the Hall of Fame, I think that's a legitimate reason not to put him in. But I don't think you can with Barry. I think Barry was a Hall of Famer before he ever took it.
See, that's the argument with Clemens, too. Clemens and
right.
Bonds were Hall of Famers before they supposedly did roids. But since they did roids, or at least that's the assumption, Roger never failed anything, But and neither did Barry, but he admitted to the clear. But since they did quote-unquote cheat after that, well, doesn't that speak volumes about their character, whether or not they had the numbers to get in? So, I mean, Curt Schilling did nothing that would be untoward during his baseball career, right? Nothing. As a player, he's a Hall of Famer.
But even the character.
But the character thing took place with Curt Schilling after his career, where he started sending out those tweets and liking a tweet about lynching journalists. So why does that have any impact on what he did? Because if you're going to look at Bonds and Clemens and say, well, they were Hall of Famers before they did steroids, well, Curt Schilling was a Hall of Famer before he started tweeting out these awful things.
And that's why you can't make it as a punishment, Michael, because you could say, oh, well, obviously Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds are bad guys because they cheated. They took PEDs. Nobody would ever call Andy Pettit a bad guy.
No.
You know, so now you're allowing your own biases to get in the way. That's why it shouldn't be a punishment. It should be, I believe he used steroids. That's why Sammy Sosa, I don't think, is in. Because if Sammy Sosa never touched PEDs, I don't think he's getting in the Hall of Fame. He was a very good player. He got in the Hall of Fame for his 600-plus home runs. Most of them he got, I think, because of PEDs. So if I had a vote, didn't vote for him, to me, that would be a legitimate reason. But to punish, to say he's got bad character because he did it, that it's some sort of a flaw, no, that's no reason. And I think Barry and I think Roger were on their way and were Hall of Famers before they ever touched it.
Now, and one final thing I'll say about this, with the baseball writers, you know, you have to be covering baseball for 10 straight years in order to get a vote. And even if you retire after that, you get the vote forever. And I know it means a lot to baseball writers. But what I would say, and I would just point to the New York Times does not let their writers vote for awards or for the Hall of Fame. And you know why? Because journalists should not be making news, they should be covering it. This should not be allowed. Writers should not be voting for the Hall of Fame. They should not be voting for the MVP. They just shouldn't. Because what you're doing, if you're voting for individual awards during the season, you're making certain players money when you're supposed to be unbiased. And they could say, I am unbiased. But still, the look is awful. You're not supposed to be making news. You're supposed to be covering it. There should be another way to select the Hall of Fame. There should be another way to give out those awards.
And this has gained some traction both with callers and in the media, of having the Hall of Famers themselves determine that.
I don't think that's a good idea either. No.
Because I guess what? If you're thinking that's an easier way for Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds to get in the Hall of Fame, you're wrong. Because a lot of the old-timers do not want PED guys in the Hall of Fame. And also, you're telling me that there's not going to be biases there? Former teammates, people that they got to know? You think they're going to really look at that and be unbiased and say, I don't think that guy's a Hall of Famer? They're gonna let their cronies in.
And can I tell you another little secret? You just move closer to the speaker.
Mm.
Some of the people that play baseball don't know the sport. They just happen to be unbelievably, unnaturally talented, and they can hit a baseball or throw a baseball. They don't even watch the game. They don't watch the game. They're not all A-Rod, who used to watch every single game when he played. No. They don't know the game like other people know the game. So those would not be the guys to choose.
And then you got the guys like the Goose Gossages of the world, God love them, who thinks the sport ended after they left, who probably wouldn't vote for Mariano Rivera to go to the Hall of Fame. Because they look at it, well, in my day, it was really a game. The silly arena baseball they're playing right now. You would have too much of that going on. You can't have the Hall of Famers vote.
All right, let's get to the phones. 1-800-919-3776. It's Kayla Greco, Rosenberg, and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN. The Michael K. Show.
His name was Luke Darby.
Luke Darby.
I went to high school with a kid named Darby LeDuc. How weird's that?
Because this guy's last name is Darby. So if Darby LeDuc married this guy, he'd be Darby Darby. Or he'd be Luke LeDuc.
Luke LeDuc is better.
That's a good name.
The Michael K. Show.
I went to high school with a kid named Darby LeDuc. How weird's that?
On 98.7 ESPN.
Not as weird as Don thought.
Why?
It's not that weird. Darby LeDuc.
And the guy's name was Luke Darby.
Right.
So... All right. Listen, I didn't realize
what happened to Darby.
We had a meeting, Peter. Michael should have just said to me, "Don, let's not have fun today."
Wow.
Then I would have just been all right. I would have just kept to the X's and all. I didn't realize we were not supposed to have fun today.
I love you having fun. But that wasn't fun. I just wanted to have fun. Peter, was that fun?
It was almost weird, but it was a little. It was a little short. It wasn't quite.
Think I turned it into something better, though.
I think we made it something.
Luke the Duke, yeah. Don, why are you so short-tempered? It's amazing.
You think I lost my temper?
Yes, you're just so sensitive.
Mm.
Must be the extra hair weighing on your scalp.
It looks. Do you think it is that? It really came out nice today.
Any closer to getting rid of it?
No. No, honestly, I wish there was a story behind it. No.
Well, there was a story in a Bleacher Report today.
Yeah.
And we have not touched on this yet during the show because I wanted to give it the proper time that it needs. But Bleacher Report is reporting, according to sources, that James Harden is leaning toward not returning to the Brooklyn Nets. He does not like the situation with Kyrie, does not like living in Brooklyn. Now, it's up to him. I don't know if he doesn't like the fact that Kyrie won't get the vaccine, or he just doesn't like the overall fact that we're playing with different teams on the road and different teams at home. Okay. Why he doesn't like living in Brooklyn, I have no idea.
Well,
but if you
don't
like living
why,
in Brooklyn.
Why do you have to live in Brooklyn?
You can live in Manhattan. You can live anywhere.
Live on Long Island. I mean,
yeah.
I don't think you have to live. Nothing says that you have to live in the borough you play in.
Now, this story comes on the heels of a story in The Athletic yesterday that the president of basketball operations of the Philadelphia 76ers, Daryl Morey, who was the GM in Houston when James Harden was playing great all the time, you know, going conference finals and failing there, his sights are set on bringing in James Harden next year. Now, James Harden has a year left on his contract, but he has an opt-out. So he could sign a contract worth over $50 million a year with the Nets as an extension if he opts in, or he can become a free agent and then sign a shorter contract somewhere else, but also right around the $50 million per year number. And that Daryl Morey has put the face of James Harden on his to-do list. And you could say, well, how can they do that? Well, they can do that this way. Ben Simmons still not playing with the 76ers, and he said he's not making any trade of Ben Simmons unless he can dramatically move the needle and help Joel Embiid win a championship. He said right now the deals that are out there, and the deadline is February 10th, is not any deal that would make us substantially better and move us closer to a championship. And he didn't say this, but sources were telling The Athletic that he's holding on to Simmons and his big contract because the only way that he could get Harden onto the Sixers would be to do a sign and trade with the Nets. Now, would the Nets want to help a trade in the Eastern Conference in their own division? Well, they might have to if they're going to lose him anyway. And there's where we get into the discussion. Remember how the Nets were set back forever with the Garnett trade?
Oh, yeah.
And the Pierce trade. I mean, they traded their future to get those two guys. Well, essentially, the Nets with Durant and Kyrie wanted to make it a sure thing that they win a championship, and they traded away talent and future first-round draft picks, I think four of them, to get James Harden. And I will tell you this, talk about pressure, everybody. If they win a championship with James Harden this year and he leaves, then it was worth it. It's hard to win championships, people.
Yeah. Yep.
But if you don't win and you lose him, wow, what a colossal mistake. Now, you could say, well, they could get back Ben Simmons, maybe. Does Ben Simmons fit with Irving and with KD? Or there's one other aspect. Kyrie has not signed an extension. He has an opt-out with 1 year left on his contract. He might say, I'm out of here. So this whole thing could go kablooey, and if they don't win a championship, what a colossal mess-up.
Wow.
And now you got to also factor in, of course, you know, a few weeks ago, I think we all felt this could be a realistic championship year. But now with the Durant injury status, do we still feel great about that? You know, KD's out for a month, and Kyrie is here intermittently. Michael, this is not an ideal circumstance to try to put this championship together.
No, by no stretch. And the only way I think that they'd be assured of getting a championship, if all three are healthy, and if somehow the vaccination rule in New York City changes and that Kyrie could play in every single game. I can't see them navigating a championship run, winning all those different levels of championships or, you know, playoff series, if you have your one of your best players playing half the time. I can't see them doing it. So, boy, there's so much pressure on this team to do it. And this Harden thing, and Harden has said publicly, I want to come back, and I didn't want to sign the extension just because I didn't want that on my mind. I'll do it at the end of the season. Now he supposedly doesn't want to be here, and that's scary. Because, I mean, Jared Allen, you gave up Jared Allen. Forget about the draft picks, because if the Nets continue to be okay, the draft picks aren't going to be all that much. But they gave away a lot of people. Spencer Dinwiddie, Jared Allen. I mean, those were big parts. Caris LeVert, big parts. Now, Spencer Dinwiddie ended up leaving as a free agent, but they couldn't bring him back anyway because of the way the tax was going to be. So they moved heaven and earth to change the entire complexion of the team to bring in Harden, and people wondered, did they really need Harden? Well, with what's happened with Kyrie, they obviously really did need Harden. But now if he leaves after 1 year and they don't win this year, boy, Sean, they got a lot of explaining to do.
Now, Peter, they can navigate their way through the regular season without even KD. I mean, for everything this team's been through, they're still a half game back of first place in the conference. But come playoff time, God, that's going to be so irritating to see him in and out of the lineup. I really hope things change.
Well, and of course,
not for any being a Net fan, just to have things just normalized here.
And of course, it's also not ideal for seeding. And seeding, Michael, to your point, will be an even bigger deal this year. And by the way, home court could be looked at as a negative for this team.
Yep.
But the seeding is going to matter either way. So right now they're sitting at the 3 at 29-17. But it certainly looks like that top six, no one behind them, between the Bucks, the Cavs, and the Sixers, I don't know how much relief they get there. It's going to be compelling stuff, and I really wonder, none of us have any idea, who could pretend to know they have an idea of what Kyrie is going to want to do?
No one.
Even the biggest Kyrie fan and supporter can't tell me with a straight face they know what Kyrie is going to want to do. Or that he'll feel some sense of obligation should Harden want to leave. We have no idea.
It's a mess. And again, one of the things that's bothering Harden is the Kyrie situation. So imagine Harden leaves, and then Kyrie, who is flighty anyway, he decides to bail. The guy that gets caught in all of this is Kevin Durant. He's only in Brooklyn because of Kyrie.
That's right.
And, you know, you talk about seeding, and as strange as it sounds, if the rules continue to be the rules, and I'm not so sure they should be, again, not going to get into it, because whether you're vaccinated or not, you can get COVID. But it's better that they don't have home court advantage anytime.
Of course.
Because in the final game of a series, you'd have Kyrie, rather than if you're playing in Brooklyn, you don't have one of your best players.
Well, at least the first two games, Michael, because, you know, game seven's not guaranteed to anybody, but do you really want to have your best player on the bench the first two games, or not even in the building, the first two games of a series?
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, but I want to dive deeper into the Kyrie situation for Harden. You got to think there's no situation next year. That shouldn't affect you re-signing with the team unless you have a problem with Kyrie.
Maybe he has a problem with Kyrie not being a teammate.
Well, that's what it has to be, right? Because you can't say it's the situation of him not being able to play home games and all that. You would think that will resolve itself by next year or during the course of the contract. You not wanting to re-up after this year can't have anything to do with Kyrie not being available for home games. It has to do with the soap opera that is Kyrie. Like thinking, all right, if I sign long-term with the Nets, what's going to be the Kyrie situation next year or the year after that?
Now let's bring it up.
So it sounds like maybe not everybody is on board with what's happening with Kyrie and the decisions that he's making.
I'm sure a lot of people are, and they just can't say it publicly because you can't upset the apple cart. So let's bring in our resident 76er expert. Would you trade Simmons for Harden?
I would, yes. Simmons is never going to play for the Sixers again. So he's just wasting space. So to get, I mean, I know Harden will be 33 next season. He's getting up there a little bit in age, but to get, a guy who was MVP only a few years ago on this team with Joel Embiid for a guy who will never play for you again.
Yeah.
I'd do it in a heartbeat. Yes.
The one of the other things that jumps, he doesn't like living in Brooklyn. As Don said, then live in Manhattan, live in Westchester, live in Long Island. What's the big deal? You don't like living. So you love living in Houston, But you talked your way out of that. Now you don't live in Brooklyn, which might be the hippest borough in all five boroughs in New York. You don't like living there. Okay. I mean, that's your taste. Well, who doesn't like living in Manhattan? So where do you like to live then?
Yeah, that's why there's something fugazi about this story, okay? Not the legitimacy of it. It's just like, is Harden trying to send some sort of a message? Like you just said, nobody wants to disrupt the apple cart and call Kyrie out. Is this Harden calling Kyrie out?
Could be.
Come on. He doesn't want to live in Brooklyn. You don't have to live in Brooklyn. He didn't say New York. He said Brooklyn.
Yeah, do the Nets have a rule that you have to live in Brooklyn? I don't think so.
Of course. I'm sure it's more convenient to live in Brooklyn.
I think you can find a car service, though.
But you can live in Manhattan. You can live out on Long Island. You can live anywhere you want, for God's sakes. He's James Harden. That shouldn't be the difference of whether you sign long-term or not. And also, the Kyrie situation, again, it should resolve itself vaccine-wise by next year.
If you're thinking of moving the needle and getting, you know, no pun intended, getting Kyrie the vaccine, right, or having him take it. If I'm Kyrie, I'm not taking it now. Rules are changing. They just shut down the mandate on masks in New York. Sooner or later, that rule, which doesn't make sense, I'm sorry. It just doesn't make sense, everybody. You're forcing people to take a vaccine for their own good now, because in the past it used to be portrayed as, well, you're doing it for other people as well. No, you can be vaccinated and boosted and get Omicron and give it to somebody else. This is now an unfair rule. And you know where I've been coming from on this the longest time. But I'm also rational. It's an unfair rule. You can't force people to protect themselves. Now, you could actually cast aspersions on people that if they're being selfish and they don't protect themselves, and in turn they're not protecting other people. But even if you're vaccinated, you are not protecting other people. I'm sorry, you're not. You're just not.
I really think this will resolve itself by the playoffs. If I'm Kyrie, I'm going to wait it out. And listen, let's face it, guys. He's not going to all of a sudden change his mind anyway.
That's already been said.
No, that's done. So
he's even said that. It's not
right.
Him.
But I would think that that's going to be the hope. Because, you know, right now, you know, Mayor Adams has got a lot of stuff on his plate right now. I'm not sure this is even something he's got to be focused on, specifically to the Nets and the NBA and basketball and sports in general. But I would think between now and the end of the regular season, which is not going to be until May, I think it's got a better chance of resolving itself. I don't think he's going to have to sit home games in the playoffs.
Let's take some phone calls. Steve in Long Island. Steve.
Hey, how you doing, fellas?
Good. Steve. How are you?
I'm good. I'm calling because of the next situation. Like, the whole thing with Kyrie, I think it's unfair because, like we said, there's unvaccinated players from other teams could come here and play, and he can't play, which makes no sense at all.
You're right.
You know?
Nope.
And the NBA telling the Nets that they can't pay the $80,000 fine, another makes no sense and nothing like that. But with James Harden, it's like James Harden seems like he doesn't know what he wants. One time he wants to stay here. He don't want to be in Brooklyn. Like you guys said, he could go to Long Island. It's not that far. He could ride the train on the Long Island or take a Uber service or something to come out there. But I still feel like the Nets are the number one team to beat. Because remember, last year, KD did it almost by himself. And if any of those guys, either James Harden, even a halftime Kyrie played last year, Milwaukee wouldn't have been a champion.
So well, I mean, I would agree they did it, but remember, Joe Harris has had a setback with the ankle. I mean, he's a big part of what they do in terms of spacing and stuff like that. I think they need all three guys playing at the top level to ensure winning a championship.
I will say the one place I disagree with the caller, I don't know if I see Harden getting to jumping on the LIR with a cannon, you know, sipping a brewski.
Sitting next to Ryan Hurley,
hitting a cannon on the way back out to LI. I don't know if I see it.
Yeah, I agree with you. That struck me as well. And I also don't even see him taking an Uber. I think like a limo probably works for him. I mean, he makes about $35 million a year.
Yeah, no, I think for the season he could probably afford whatever car he wants to drive him. Because, listen, I get it. He's not a hipster. I could see Jim Broharden not being the kind of guy who wants to be in Brooklyn. Okay.
The beard screams hipster.
His beard does scream hipster, but lifestyle-wise, I see him on the west side of Manhattan in a big, brand-new, huge building a walking distance from some full adult establishments that have great entertainment and delicious steaks. The limo waits for him, takes him right to Barclays Center. He'll be good to go.
I think he could hire Mel Hall's limo driver, Peter.
Yeah, because it's quiet.
Mel Hall had a limo driver 30 years ago, I'm sure.
Yeah, Jim could do it.
Jim Harden could definitely.
So what you're describing, Peter, is he had all of that in Houston.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
That's what. But that's the thing. He was That is the funny part. It seemed that he loved the lifestyle in Houston,
right?
But was desperate to get off the team. But maybe
he had an opportunity to be traded to Philly too.
Maybe he really just thought things were going to be different in Brooklyn. It was going to be a little bit more of a straight walk than this sort of hike that he's on. And he has to be captain consistency here. I mean, with all due respect, it's not KD's fault, but KD has not been consistently around. Harden's been the one who's there night in, night out over the last 2 years.
And maybe he had no idea of the magical world of Kyrie Irving and what it actually entailed.
Yeah, you almost don't know it until you're a part of it, right?
I mean, listen, the only thing we can wait for is, you know, at some point when KD, because KD usually lets things out at some point. Like, he's going to let his feelings be known at some point. Whenever KD does the interview or writes the book, I'm so curious to what KD's real view of this whole thing has been.
Now, I'm a little concerned. I don't know if you guys know this. Our good buddy Spike has COVID. What are you doing, Spike? How do you feel?
I feel what happened is I had a scheduled surgery this morning, and I had some issues with the symptoms, and I went to the primary yesterday, and he checked me out, and I took a test at one of the drive-thru swab tests, and they said they'll have the results in 2 or 3 hours. And, you know, I'm very conscious of not, putting other people in harm's way. I mean, that's just the way I am, and you guys are, I'm sure, that way, too. So I called the surgeon up, and he said, let me go late in the morning. Test came back inconclusive, and I didn't realize there were so many variables. And the inconclusive means I do have it. It's just not conclusive to be positive. This thing is rampant down here again. So I talked to the oral surgeon team, and they were very, very appreciative, as you would imagine. And they said, wait 72 hours, take another test. And if it's negative, if it's up to do a swab test, then we'll go ahead with it. But they were so grateful. It made me feel good, but they would do the same.
Well, we hope you feel better.
Do you feel okay?
My voice is shot. I have some chills and aches and pains. I'm running a low-grade fever. It's been on and off, and as you guys know, I'm immunocompromised. So I have a bunch of procedures set up, but you know what it is? My radio family gets me through this stuff. I'm being very honest with you guys. I put one foot in front of the other and take one procedure, but I'll never put anybody in harm's way. I wouldn't do that, and I would expect nobody else to do that too. Unfortunately, people go in there. Michael, Don, Peter, I heard people going in there with 102 fever. I mean, my God. Yeah, you just don't understand humanity. But thanks for asking. I'll be fine. God willing. I just want to tell you, a couple of my boys sent me the book at the same time, and they got copies. It's so wonderful. It's so warming. Of course,
the book he's talking about is Blood in the Garden that we talked to Chris Herring earlier.
Yeah. And I know Chris Herring, and I've spoken to him when he was at, I believe, the Times. A laughable young guy, and my God, I wish this book was as thick as warm piece. It's riveting, and I lived through every dribble like you did, Michael, and Don and Peter. Well, I don't know about Peter, but possibly. And it's keeping my mind sane. But I'll tell you something. I remember that fight, and I believe it was down in South Carolina?
Yes.
Training camp. Yeah. And I knew all about Riley, because thanks for the extra time. I had one quick story. Pat Riley grew up in Schenectady, New York, and I have friends at Union College. And Billy Connors, who used to be a pitcher and a pitching coach for the Yankees, was a great athlete up in Schenectady. And we went out one night for the normal, you know, some bar food and just BSing about sports. And Billy Connors' picture was on the wall, remember the 8x10 glossies? I don't even know if they make them anymore. And Pat Riley's, they were rivals in Schenectady, New York. Pat Riley will never be forgiven with me. And I said this to Larry the other night. Three things I'll never forgive. I'll never forgive Patrick Ewing post night when I was there. Unforgivable to do that to somebody. Totally unforgivable to someone who gave it all. I'll never forget what Julius Randle did. I think he's totally exposed, and his worth has gone down to the bottom, and he has to go. I know, Michael, you feel who's going to score the points at this point. His attitude, his lack of effort, not knowing that you could go into the backcourt, I just don't get it. But I'll leave you with this. I appreciate everything you do. Everybody, get this book. You don't have to be a Knicks fan. It's brilliantly written. And it will unravel some things you guys, am I right, Michael, will never believe.
Yep. Feel better, Spike.
Yeah.
Absolutely feel better.
Feel better, Spike.
Quick notes about two things. All right, so we mentioned Billy Connors, the former Yankee pitching coach, no longer with us. This is gross, but all you had to do with Billy Connors, all you had to do was show him milk. Like players would come up to him and have milk and dribble it down their mouth. And he would projectile vomit.
Wow.
Just looking at milk.
That's worse than you.
Well, I like milk. I haven't had it in forever, but I like milk.
I didn't mean milk. I mean other things.
Oh. And then the second thing is, I'm surprised that Spike got COVID because I was in the St. Pete Clearwater area about 3 weeks ago. I didn't think there was COVID there. There's no mask. Nobody. I mean, it's like it's a different country than up here.
Huh. Still got it, though, huh?
Yeah, he still got it.
Interesting.
Oh, boy. I wish there was something like that with you, Peter. If I showed you milk that you would projectile vomit, I would do it all the time.
That's really rude that you would want me to projectile vomit.
Not very nice. I don't like milk either. Not to that point. But
if you looked at it, you wouldn't throw up.
No.
I haven't bought dairy milk in years.
You're an almond milk guy, right?
I was, and now the almond milk is so bad for the environment that I'm drinking oat milk.
How do you get the milk? I've had oat milk ice cream, and it's just horrendous.
What? No.
It's just all. It tastes like cardboard.
Well, I can't speak for the ice cream. I do eat dairy ice cream, but oat milk to drink to do the job of like putting it in your coffee, cereal, or even just some warm milk to heat up and have with cookies, whatever. Oat milk totally does the job. But you know how much water it takes to make, like, one almond?
How many? How much?
It's, like, gallons and gallons of water to make one almond. And you know how many almonds it takes to make a delicious container of almond milk? A gazillion. So do the math. It's a gazillion gallons of water.
So it's a gazillion times hundreds of gallons.
Right.
Interesting. Yeah, so maybe you're ruining the environment by stealing water, Peter.
What do you mean, stealing water?
You're stealing water because you're drinking oat milk and you're making them.
No, that's almond milk. That's why I switched to oat.
Oh.
To not steal water.
That's important. Thank you. 1-800-919-3776. Andrew's saying we're over time limit, so we have to break.
Thank God.
It's Kayla Greco Rosenberg and you. Maybe we'll talk about, you know, Darby LeDuc a little bit more right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah.
We're going to hear this in 3 weeks of the Super Bowl, and it's going to be a moment.
You think so?
I mean, that I read there are bets already moving around on what songs are performed. I would be absolutely flabbergasted if Dre and Snoop didn't do some sort of medley that included that song, Still Dre, and the next episode. Shocked. Flabbergasted.
Is it still a thing, Peter? Was it ever a thing?
What?
Like, is that something you're looking forward to? Even as fans of the artist, is that like the atmosphere? Is that the moment where you really feel like you get the best of that particular artist, that you actually look forward to that at halftime?
This one I am curious about on account of, you know, how many people are there. You know, and just sort of the history of how hard it was to ever imagine a time when Snoop Dogg, who at one point, when he, back in the day when he was Snoop Doggy Dogg in 1993-94 and was Public Enemy number one, for him to now be like this national treasure who will be at the Super Bowl, that part intrigues me. And then, you know, Eminem being on stage with a live mic I find interesting. I saw one of the bets is, will Eminem make a political statement on stage?
You know what I'm curious about? I mean, all of these artists that are going to be at halftime have songs where they curse. Will they curse? Will it have to be bleeped out, or will they play sanitized versions of
this
songs,
happened,
which I think is a bit of a sellout if they do that?
Well, no. This has happened before. This has happened before. Never artists who curse as much maybe as this group.
Right.
But in the past, the artists just changed the word slightly. They just, they're
not going
to
curse. But isn't that selling out?
No.
Well, that's not their song.
Well, what do you mean? I mean, radio edits have been made for every artist.
Yeah.
Even the most hardcore of artists have to make radio edits that they send to radio.
Do they make it, or do
Well, their producer does. I mean, they make sure it's done. So it's not selling out. It's part of the game. So
sure.
No, but okay. Will any slip? I would say between Snoop, Eminem, and Dre. I'm not worried about Kendrick. Certainly not worried about Mary J. Blige. But between Snoop, Dre, and M. Could anything get through? Sure. I certainly don't believe someone's – there are also bets on will Snoop Dogg smoke a blunt, smoke some of the boobange on stage, and I absolutely don't think he's going to hit the boobange.
Now, there was something very, very, I guess you could say disturbing, that was revealed on DiPietro and Rothenberg today, our fine show that you could hear from 5 to 8 in the morning. Rather than have me even set it up, I just want you guys to listen. I don't know if you guys even know what went on.
I heard.
It's a little out there. Here is our my good friend, Rick DiPietro.
At a minimum, why don't you listen to the show and also partake?
Yeah, well, I would just, I mean, throw the
like
earbud
that kind
in.
Of party.
Throw the earbud in. Do both. Multitask.
Yeah, but you don't want the earbud. Got like a pop out and
I got in big trouble a couple weeks ago trying to do that.
You were trying to listen to a show and you performed?
Yeah, well, I was already listening to the show, and then I don't think she noticed that I had the earbud in, so I was like, oh, I'm not going to, I'll just keep it in. And then midway through, she's like, are you listening to something? I was like, oh, no, I forgot to. I forgot
what
to
were you listening to?
I might have been listening to the K-Show.
So you're listening to the K-Show? So this is Afternoon Delight.
Yeah.
And Cass is like, Rick, let's go. And you're like, all right, hang on a minute. ENN is, you know what? I could do both.
Wow. No, I tried to be, it was worse. I tried to be sneaky. I'm like, I don't think she's noticed that. I'm just going to keep it in.
I'm both repulsed and very, very complimented by that.
It's just weird.
I mean, can you even be surprised, though, Don?
Yes, I'm kind of surprised.
I don't
I love our show, but I don't see how we can enhance his performance.
Why not?
Hearing Michael,
he's hearing me, yeah,
right. Think about that. You know,
unless we go to the movie Private Parts and go that route, I guess we can maybe help in that sense. But
here's what I don't understand.
I think there's a sick thing going on between you and Rick.
Yeah. I love it. But
I don't know why you would love it that his relationship with you arouses him. That should disturb you.
Well, it doesn't disturb me.
Now, what about, I also heard, I got a tweet this morning also, that apparently, this is what I heard, I could be corrected. Something happened with like Greeny accidentally calling Rothenberg Rosenberg.
Yes, he did. He called him Peter Rosenberg, but he was talking about Dave Rothenberg.
Oh, no. How did Dave feel about that?
That could happen. When you don't really care about either of the two people.
Oh,
wait.
Wow. Broadside swipe.
Greeny is a regular listener.
I don't think he's emotionally invested in either of the two of you. But he knows you exist and knows that you're a part of the station, but can actually mix and match and forget one
another. No,
Peter, you fall on the heading of them guys.
I have been them boys before. Right. I've been a member of them boys before, but I actually truly believe that Greeny absolutely knows the difference between Dave Rothenberg and Peter Rosenberg and could even give a little bit of information on each of us.
Now, getting back to the Rick thing, Don, you have children. I mean, they have three ambulatory kids. So it was during the K show, which is anywhere from 3 to 7.
That's how the unbelievable part.
How do you cut away to do whatever they did? Where are the kids? I don't believe they have a nanny or an au pair. Can't they just walk in on them?
But one of them, I think Milo's in school now, no?
Yeah, but not till 7.
Might have been 3. Wasn't home yet.
That's a very dangerous maneuver.
Also, kids like TV. A screen will distract a kid endlessly.
TV.
Don, if you gave Marco and Jalen an iPad right now and said, knock yourselves out, gave them each an iPad, you couldn't get a half hour?
Oh, I can get 6.
You can get 6 with an iPad. So,
Don,
that's it.
Don would only need 2-3 minutes.
That's it.
Yeah, that's all he need.
I'm flattered you gave me that much.
That shows great respect.
But I can give Marco or Jalen my phone or the iPad and just scream their name, and they wouldn't move.
Right. So there you go. Maybe, listen, if it helps, Michael, maybe you should call Rick tonight and ask him for all the details of him and his wife's intimacy, because that seems like right up your alley in that relationship.
I mean, I don't know why he wouldn't share it.
Rick, why don't you just call in? Rick, just call in. Tell us all the details.
I'm surprised he doesn't FaceTime you, but listening to the show, he's one notch from FaceTiming you.
You know, he should FaceTime when he's with Cassie, if you know what I mean.
That's what I meant.
Oh, okay.
I just don't understand why he felt like he had to incorporate both. Like, I don't know whether he's just way into the show or just doesn't love his wife.
Well, he loves Cassie, but I think he also loves me in his own way.
Do you think it's lost on the
audience?
Why is it
always you? There's other people on the show, Michael. I know you don't sometimes realize that.
I love you guys, but he likes me better than you guys. That's all I'm saying.
He didn't say I was listening to the K show.
Right.
But there's other elements besides you.
I understand, and they're better elements to me, but he likes me better than you.
Don, what are you fighting for here? Do you really need this? You really need to be a part of this.
I'm just trying to reveal the true, Michael.
Well, listen, it came out just in a moment ago, and it probably happened so quickly that our audience, who loves Michael, doesn't even notice that he basically wishes out loud, Don, that his good friend would send would FaceTime him so Michael could observe his wife during intimate times.
I didn't say observer. Did I say anything about observing his wife?
Didn't you say?
I didn't say anything about the wife.
Cassie?
But I didn't mean anything about the wife.
So you just want to see Rick during that time.
I didn't say anything.
You know what?
I don't think there's anything wrong with it other than the fact that he'd be cheating on Jody. I just want him to admit it.
Cheating on Jody? How?
What, that he'd leave Jody for Rick?
Yeah.
I wouldn't leave Jody for Rick, and Rick wouldn't leave Cassie for me. Can't we just have something special?
I don't know that.
And what if you could be a thruple? Jody, and Rick.
No, I'm not into that.
Okay.
Because Michael does like to win. That's like Keith Hernandez and Willie Stargell. They're sharing the award. You don't want to do that.
There's a lot of ways to lose, too. I think there's more downside than upside.
Wait, who did Stargell? It was Willie and it was,
Keith Willie Hernandez
Mays and Willie Stargell?
They were co-MVPs.
No, I got bad news.
Stargell and Hernandez.
Yeah, that's what I said. No?
He did. He thought it was Mays.
Oh, it was Stargell and Hernandez?
Yes, they tied for MVP.
79.
'79. And so everyone, do people refer to it as being one of theirs and not the other by accident or no?
Yeah. They'll say Keith Hernandez won the MVP, and they leave out Stargell. I'm sure right, in Pittsburgh they say Stargell won the MVP.
But that's the problem, Don, is in this thruple, he becomes Stargell. You know, they're only talking about what Rick did. That's the problem.
All right, let's take a brief time out. I've done some numbers crunching, and there's a lot of inequities when it comes to Hall of Fame consideration. We'll have the Hall of Fame results at 6:15, right in the middle of ENN. But I'm going to advocate for one of my guys that doesn't get enough love. That happens when we get back right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Welcome back to the Michael K. Show. Before we get to your phone calls about David Ortiz getting into the Hall of Fame, the only one selected in this vote, he'll join Tony Oliva and Jim Cott at the Hall of Fame ceremonies later this summer. Don has an announcement to make.
Well, tomorrow at 11:45, the Giants are going to officially introduce Joe Shane as their general manager. And we're going to air that press conference beginning at 11:45. And I'm going to do a show until 2 following the press conference.
Really?
We'll take your phone calls and get reaction from Joe's press conference.
Peter, he can't get enough.
He loves it.
He just loves what he does.
He wants to do shows at any pre-shows, post-shows, mid-shows.
Any show.
So if they asked you, you would have said no?
Yeah.
Okay.
Why didn't you ask Peter that? I think he'd say the same thing.
I asked you both.
I would do some things. I don't think this would be the one mid-weekday.
Listen, we all do things for the station, and since I'm the Giant fan, and
that's right,
I'm available. They
that
asked me, and I said yes.
Damn right you did.
You're a good
guy. Think that means that I have a on-air problem.
No, it's not a problem, but you love being on air. That's cool. Let's go to the phones. Chris in Manhattan. Chris.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
Good. Happy birthday, Mindy.
Oh, nice. Very nice.
Good job,
of you.
Chris.
Thank you, Chris. That's nice.
Listen, we're all forgetting a huge fact here. If you put that guy who's a little bit on the heavier side, like myself, on first base for 150 games, by September and October, those balls might not be going over the fence. Let's not forget that he only DH'd his whole career.
But yeah, Edgar Martinez got in.
But, Chris, I
know.
But of all the things, that's not an issue. It's a position. And he did it as well as anybody. It's a position. Just like, you know, a lot of people didn't want to select relievers. It's a position. They excelled at the position. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
designated hitter is a position.
That debate's over now. I mean, I think, especially now that we're going to probably go to the universal DH, I don't think that should exclude them from ever getting into the Hall of Fame.
No way.
But what's a major issue, again, to me, not only is Ortiz in, and he deserves to be in. Michael, he got in first ballot.
Yep.
Didn't even have to wait. So even if you said, all right, well, there's excuses for the PED stuff, that it's not exactly the same as Barry and Clemens, those guys will now not get in. And really, when you think about the voting, Michael, it really didn't even come that close. And this guy got in first ballot. Bunch of hypocrites.
Let's go to William in Manhattan. William.
Hello, guys. Baseball fan. Yeah, I like baseball.
Thank you.
After seeing this, like, this is wrong. This is wrong on every level. They Bond should have been in. He had the numbers before the suspicion of PEDs. He never failed the test. Ortiz, supposedly on that survey, failed there. Then they voted Buck Filian, the commissioner who's overseeing this, and Tony La Russa had Mark McGuire, Jose Canseco, Joe Torre had steroid players, and they got in. It's because they didn't like Bonds, they don't like Clemens, they love all these guys, so they just vote them in, and that is wrong. They need to change that. Every era has some type of advantage that players have taken, used something. It's a proven fact. Every era is different, right?
Well, I mean,
every draws in the different era was there, and they in there, they just didn't like these players, and that's so wrong.
Especially that they didn't fail a test. And that's the one thing that everybody uses as a shield to vote for Ortiz. Well, after the baseline testing in 2003, which was uncovered by the Times in 2009, he never, ever failed the test, and there was testing across baseball. And I'll just come back and make them all look foolish. You suspended Alex Rodriguez for a year, never failed the test. So you've got to be really, really dense to fail a test. Like, you know why Melky Cabrera failed his test on? He thought he had a night game instead of a day game.
Right.
So he took the drug earlier than he should, or too close to the game and when he was going to get tested. That's the only reason. He had a year where he was going to win the batting title. We would have never known if he actually knew the time of the game that he was playing. So you can get around testing positive. I'm sorry, you could. A lot of guys did. So if you just ignore that, then Bonds and Clemens have to be in. But one of the sketchy arguments is that both Bonds and Clemens would have been Hall of Famers if they never took it, if they stopped their career before they started taking it. These are the words that are in the voting instructions: integrity, sportsmanship, and character. So, doesn't matter when you didn't show character or didn't show integrity. It doesn't matter if you didn't do. I mean, they keep Curt Schilling out because of his awful views after playing. After his numbers would tell you he's a Hall of Famer. Curt Schilling's mouth got him out of the Hall of Fame because he came close. He got 70% 2 years ago. 70%, very close. And he said all the writers are idiots. Think about that. 70% of the voters voted him in. And he, because of the 30% that didn't, he called them idiots, and now he's down to 58.6. Good move, Curt. You really did yourself proud.
He's the
Let's
worst.
Go to Tyler and Mawa.
Hey, guys, huge fan of the show, first-time caller. I wanted to make a Hall of Fame point. I don't understand why everyone makes such an outrage over all the PED guys and no one mentions Curt Schilling. I agree, and I totally believe that all the PED guys should get in if you're going to let one in, like Big Poppy. But I do not understand why there's not more outrage over Curt Schilling when literally the only reason he's not in is because he's unlikable.
Well, I mean,
it's a fair argument.
It's a fair point because all of his unlikability, although he wasn't loved by his teammates because he's kind of a, arrogant, but everything that he did that questions his sportsmanship and character happened after he finished playing.
Right. But what makes him unlikable are the things that he said.
He wanted journalists to be strung
right.
up.
And I do think
he compared Muslims to Nazis.
Right. And there is an awkwardness too, Michael. Would he take the platform of the Hall of Fame and the speech and spew that kind of rhetoric as well? So,
but the caller answered it. He asked the question and answered it. Why not the outrage? The outrage is because he is so the lack of outrage is because Curt
right.
is so unlikable.
But what makes him unlikable is the reason he's not in, not that he's unlikable. You follow what I'm saying? It's not mm-hmm. like, we didn't like Curt Schilling because he didn't talk to the media, or we didn't like Curt Schilling because – no, they don't like him because of the things that he says, the views, the over-the-top views that he's had. If you take that away, he'd be in. So it's not really likable, unlikable. It's what he said makes him unlikable.
Whereas in the case of Bonds, Clemens, and Poppy, they all did the same thing.
Right.
One whose personality was better got in.
Right. The reason that people don't like Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens are not all because of the PEDs. They were unlikable to begin with. Barry was very standoffish. He was not Barry was just not a likable guy. He didn't get along with the media, didn't talk a lot. He just was a different guy. He just was not as likable.
Barry wasn't standoffish. He was a really nasty dude.
Well, that's
really, really bad guy to people. And another person brought up a great point. There are managers that are in the Hall of Fame that won World Series and games because they had guys that were using steroids playing for them. And there's Bud Selig that many people say turned a blind eye to steroids, and he's in the Hall of Fame. So why are the steroid guys in the Hall of Fame?
It's
question to explore.
And the momentum is starting to turn to where people just don't care, Michael. They just want to, especially now where you see as many pitchers doing it as hitters. So what advantage was there really? And if and Jose Canseco ended up being right, 75-80% of these guys on. So where was the advantage? Where was the cheating?
They were all cheating.
The guys I feel bad for are the guys that would never get a sniff of the Hall of Fame that might have had a shot if everything was equal and decided to be clean and not take anything. How about those guys? All the money they lost, all the accolades that they lost because they decided to do it the right way and ended up being the minority when all the years we thought they were the majority. Now it's starting to look like that. That was the wrong move to make, as ridiculous as that is, because you were the outlier. You were the one that wasn't trying to get the help, and you ended up not making teams. You ended up not making all-star games, not hitting incentives, and not getting huge contract extensions. Melky Cabrera ended up getting a contract right after he was kicked out from taking his PEDs. San Francisco got rid of him. Toronto gave him a $16 million contract.
Troubling times. We'll continue to take your phone calls, and on the Yes Network, we have a hot stove show that we'll talk about this as well right after this show. And on 98.7, we have the Islanders against the Flyers.
That's right.
So the pregame's at 7 and game time is at 7:30. Lots to do. Come on back. Kay LaGreca-Rosenberg and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.